Welcome to the game.
It's a beautiful thing.
With Mark Duffield.
By golly gosh.
The son of a darkened shearer and a self-described ball-playing jack-of-all-trades.
We shouldn't be surprised, should we?
Who lit up footy fields in the southwest before becoming WA's preeminent AFL scribe.
My goodness.
And Glenn Quarterman.
Wow-wee.
A proud Victorian parked permanently in the west who would have played 300 AFL games if not for his incredibly small hands.
Goodness gracious me.
Together, they are Duff and Quarters.
You know who.
And this is your favourite footy podcast.
It's unbelievable.
Hello, everybody. It's time for the Duff and the Quarters podcast. It pairs the son of a darkened shearer and the man who was destined for greatness but came up short because of incredibly small hands. And Glenn Quartermain, sitting to my right here in the studio at Seven West Media, he's going to embark on a new chapter in his life today. When junior football training resumes, Quarters, are you nervous? Are you toey?
All of those things.
And please don't wear your Kramer Ass Man shirt to football
training. The Ass Man will be being removed and I'll be wearing my Mount Lawley Inglewood Junior Football Club shirt.
Very good.
Look, I am a bit toey. No doubt all the kids are. I'm really excited. It's going to be great to be back. I guess I feel a great sense of responsibility because obviously there are very stringent conditions placed on us. You know, the 1.5-metre rule, the 4 square metres, there's no shared drink bottles. So we've been sending out emails ad nauseum telling them to bring their own drink bottles. They can use our footies, but we need to sanitise them before and after and during. All of those sorts of things have to be in place. So, look, it'll be a challenge, but obviously there's no tackling, no contact. I'm just going to try and keep it as interesting as possible. There's two groups to 20. Chris Besong is coach of – you'd know him from – played a fair bit of footy. Won a Butcher medal at Perth, I think.
Very good player, Chris Besong.
And played a game, played some AFL with Melbourne. I think it was Melbourne. Good fella, great coach. He's coaching the Year 8 Whites. I've put my hand up to coach the Year 8 Blues this year because I get Sundays off and it's the first year they've switched to Sundays. So really excited. Tonight will be a bit of running, bit of kicking, bit of handball, bit of rapid-fire handball, and we'll finish off with a good old goal-kicking competition, I think, tonight.
So every coach has a key message when he addresses his players. You don't want to clog their brains too much, as Mick Malthouse would say. Keep it as simple as possible. What will be your key message to your kids tonight?
I think just respect the rules. And the key message for me will be throughout the year will be you've always got some kids who are better than other kids. And it's going to be about make the kids around you better and you'll be a better team. That'll be my message this year. I'll tell you a very funny story. A mate of mine was coaching many years ago. He was coaching, I think it was about an under-8s team. And I didn't know who he was coaching. I've just given it away there. But he was coaching a team and I thought it was under-13s or something. And he said, look, it's a preliminary final. It's a grand final. Do you want to show – I'll show you the dossier I've prepared. And he showed me this dossier. It was really full on. I couldn't follow it.
So if you couldn't, what hope the kids?
Well, no, and then I said, what are they, 13, 14? He said, no, 7. And I just laughed. Jack Gunston was in that team.
Jack Gunston?
He was in that team, yeah, and obviously had a great spurt after that. Really interesting. It was a draw and they had extra time and lost and all the kids were crying and I remember just walking past my mate saying, see you, mate, all yours. So coaching, I think, can be very rewarding. It can have its moments.
But that's a bit serious for seven-year-olds, I would have thought.
I think it was. It was a very impressive dossier, I've got to tell you.
So will you have a flood defence?
No.
Frontal press?
Not allowed to do any of that, mate. You've got to keep it very simple. At this stage, it's about the kids having fun. We remember how much fun we had playing footy and it was uncomplicated.
Yep.
It was just see footy, get footy, you know, kick goals. So
see footy, get footy, kick footy to opposition, run back and defend.
Yeah, I'll put my small hand up there. Really excited. And good luck to all the kids who are starting this week. Remember, look, just I know it's a bit of a pain in the bum, but you've got to stick to the rules that they lay out, your coaches lay out, listen to your coaches. Footy will be back. You'll be playing. I'm pretty confident they'll be playing this year. There's no guarantees, but I think it'll be a shortened season, probably in July sometime. And just listen to your coaches and just have fun and remember how good it is to be out there playing the great game of Aussie rules.
So I think that was the message from Gavin Taylor when he spoke last week. They're expecting to get community, junior and country football back up in July, all things being equal and no great disasters with the coronavirus. So this is a significant step forward. And Quarters, we wish you well.
Thank you, mate.
And be clear, keep it simple, and don't get abusive.
No, I won't. We're not allowed to do any of that, mate. You get into too much trouble. And my wife, Lisa, is president of the club, so I won't be stepping out of line, I can tell you.
So speaking of conditions, on the back page of our paper today...
Incredible.
Effectively, to bonk or not to bonk? Oh, that is the question.
I'm a bit confused because you're allowed to have intimate relations with someone, but you're not allowed to hook up. So I assume from that... there's just no Tinder.
Yeah,
they're not allowed to. Yeah.
These are the new terms, aren't they? The hookup.
That's right, the hookup. It took me a while for the penny to drop because I lived in different times, Duff.
We so didn't did have I, Tinder. Glenn.
We had 20 cents into the red phone and ringing their parents to see if she could come out.
Yes, or the at the pub at
that's right
at 10:30 and after. Drinking too many beers with your mate, suddenly realising there was a good-looking girl on the other side of the room.
Or at 1 a.m. after too many rocket fuels and, and mistakenly thinking she was a good-looking girl. But anyway, we move on.
So what did you make of that?
Oh, look, well, if you look at it, they are in a hub. They're going to be pretty strict conditions put on them. No restaurants, no cafes. What I took from it is that you're just not allowed to hook up. You're not allowed to do any social media invitations. So it will be – and that's fair enough. I mean, they are in hubs for a reason. They're in they're almost in quarantine. So,
but this is not just for the hub teams. This is across the board.
Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose it has to be, doesn't it? There's still pretty stringent conditions put on people even if you're not in a hub. I mean – I can see the merit in it. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but this is where we're at. And if we want to get a season up, it really does sound ridiculous. We'll look back on it in 10 years and say, wow, yeah, I remember that. That was crazy. But I can see why they're doing it.
No, I can see why they're doing that. And in fact, this condition actually makes a lot of sense. But let's sit it alongside another condition that they've got.
Yep.
No golf.
Well, you know, I had a game of golf yesterday.
So control your bonking, but don't play golf at all.
It's ridiculous. I mean, I had a game of golf yesterday, Duff, down at Seaview in Cottesloe. Beautiful course down
Lovely
there.
Course.
It's very windy. But, you know, the pins have to remain in on the greens now. The cups are in upside down, so you don't have to reach in. I played with two guys. Didn't go anywhere near each other. Kept well within our social distancing. So I can't think of another sport or recreation where you'd be less likely to contract COVID-19.
And I just – the AFL gets so concerned about the what they call the optics of these things. Well, and they're acting like they're being treated like a privileged few because they can go about their business. And I think everyone in the community has to get their head around this. If it's unsafe to play AFL football, if it's likely to trigger a massive outbreak in this pandemic, then we shouldn't do it. But if the risks can be controlled, if there are protocols that can be put in place, this is not a special privilege. This is an industry going about its business. Now, do you say to a guy who's been allowed to go back to work in his job at an office or somewhere, oh, sorry, you've been privileged to go back to work, so you're not allowed to play golf? We don't do that.
No. I'm hearing you.
So why are we doing this? This is ridiculous. And it was always ridiculous the whole way through that people couldn't play golf. I don't agree with Sam Newman on that many things. But really, the no golf thing all through this whole pandemic, it's the greatest nonsensical thing you could ever have. And in a situation where what is going to be at risk, the more time we spend with restrictions on our lives and the more freedoms that are taken away from us, what is going to be at risk is our mental health.
Absolutely.
And so anything we can do that offsets that, that gives us a different look at life, that gives us, I think the term that Craig Vozzo used at a press conference last week was to be able to live more broadly. Surely playing golf is a reasonable thing.
Well, I couldn't agree more.
To be allowed to
couldn't
do.
Couldn't agree more. Just a little bit of respite from what it's going to be a grind for them. I mean, as I think Trevor Nisbet said today or yesterday, it's not, it's no holiday. We're not going up there. It's not a holiday camp. They're going there for business. So, You know, my favourite quote of the week. So obviously the Eagles and Dockers are both staying at the Royal Pines.
Yes.
I know the Royal Pines. I've played at Duff, played it in a golf tournament, played the wrong sequence of holes, so I had to go back and play them again. That's why I remember Royal Pines. But pretty tough course too from memory. But they're playing.
Stuffed up Royal Pines royally,
oh,
did you?
Royally, yes. So they're staying there. So now Adelaide and Port Adelaide have been put up at the Macquarie. Not happy, Port Adelaide. Koshy and Hinkley have come out and said, we don't want to live with them. What did Koshy say? We respect them. We just don't like them. We eat Balfour's pies. They eat quiche and drink champagne or drink Chardonnay. So pretty funny comments from Koshy.
I'm tipping that Koshy wouldn't have had too many Balfour's pies, and I'm tipping he might be partial to the odd sip.
Have you had a Balfour's pie, Duff?
I have had a Balfour's pie.
Now, rate it.
Yeah, I rate it one of the better pies.
Okay, I haven't had one.
Going around. There's another pie that comes out of South Australia, which is as good, if not better. But I would say the Balfour's pie is better than your average mass-produced
Better than
pie.
A 4 and 20?
Yeah, I'd have it ahead of a 4
I like
and 20.
A 4 and 20. I'll tell you a good one. A Beaumont's in Geelong too. They're good. They're not bad either.
Well, the Mount Claremont Community Bakery, you have to say, the peppered steak pie there. That is the duck's nuts.
I'm going to say the Augusta Bakery pies. Very good down there.
Very good. Denmark Bakery.
Any reasonable bakery yes. is worth visiting, I'd suggest. You can't drive past them if you're hungry and not buy a pie, can you, Duff?
There are two things you judge a bakery on, Quarters. That is their pie. Like, you pick your favourite one, whether it's, you know, chunky beef or whether it's beef and mushroom or whether it's pepper steak. It's always pepper steak for me. The other thing is the jam and cream donut.
Yep.
If they can't nail the jam and cream donut, it's a big blot on their copybook as a bakery.
And you know what? One of the most underrated skills in Australia is the ability to drive a manual while eating a pie and sauce. I'm not getting on you. I've mastered it. There's a way of doing it. Every now and then you have to swap the pie over, but long as it's not too hot.
Yeah, I always have a go at it, but I've never managed it without spillage, I have to say. And isn't it hot when it gets on your fingers?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Anyway, we digress, I'm pretty sure.
We do. So the whole Port Adelaide antipathy.
Just put them up at the Ramsgate.
I was going to say, they've got to rename the Macquarie the Ramsgate. Let's have a sense of humour about this.
Oh, look, if it works, just get along and we'll be through it before you know it. So let's just endure it. I'm sure they will.
Do you reckon that this antipathy is as deep with the players as it is with
them? No, I don't.
You know, I think
it's a historical thing, and it makes good listening and makes good reading.
Makes good theatre for
makes
the fans.
Great theatre. And I thought it was pretty funny. I don't think there's any real, you know, no harm done in it. I think it's funny. I'm glad Koshy came out and said that. But, look, I'm not sure how much substance there really is to it.
You know, I remember the Demolition Derby 2000, yep. and there was a tribunal hearing on I'm guessing it was the Tuesday or the Wednesday afterwards. And we've gone in. The tribunal hearing was somewhere in the city centre. I think it was at the Administrative Appeals Tribunal, one of their video conferencing rooms. So they're all set up in Melbourne. They've had a pre-hearing sort of a talk, and the player advocate, Bert Gordian, remember old Bert Gordian, who used to represent a lot of the players at the hearing, he's making all these pronouncements. This will not be a friendly hearing, gentlemen. He's briefing the tribunal. These people do not like each other. And he's almost preparing us for war in the waiting room outside. And I'm thinking, geez, this is going to be interesting.
We will fight them on the beaches.
I'm sitting outside with my laptop, sort of like walking in and out with a notebook, taking notes of things. And outside, the players are sitting there cracking jokes with each other. I remember Sean McManus walking in. I think he was up on a melee charge. Ben Cousins.
Everyone was up on a melee charge.
I think Ben Cousins was there. I think he was also up on some sort of melee charge. They walked in. G'day, Macca. G'day, Cuz. How you going, mate? Had a laugh. And all this angst and anger that they were talking about inside, it just doesn't – the guys in the arena, the Warriors, they tend to deal with it and move on pretty quickly, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, I think so.
So I think Koshy should as well.
Back to training, Duff. A couple of good sights there for people. One was Jesse Hogan at Freo.
Yep.
And all the best, Jesse. You'd love to see him back out in the track as soon as he's ready, as the Dockers say. And a very trim Josh Kennedy coronavirus is the lockdown has been good to him.
So historically, when the guy sheds weight late in the career, that's almost the acknowledgement, I've lost a bit of athleticism, I need to recover a bit of mobility.
Well, it's a shortened season.
I need to take a bit of a look at this.
I think they're unique circumstances. I agree with you, but I think it is a unique season. It's a shortened season. So I think that it's got as much to do with that as anything more. It's about mobility.
The other thing is Josh can be deceptive. He tends to wear loose shorts, you know, he's not one of those vain guys that I seriously doubt Josh Kennedy spends much time in front of a mirror.
No, I would agree.
He's not one of those athletes.
He's had a bit of a beard trim. I think the head shave was a penalty from the club, though, from the players, I think.
Right.
Pretty sure.
So, what in lieu of
what? I don't know.
Well,
you know what they do. There's penalties for everything when you're in an AFL club.
I reckon Josh Kennedy's going to be one of the fascinating ones, isn't he? Like we thought he'd had a big preseason. He didn't have a great last community series game on Griffin Lowe.
No.
He didn't have a great round one against Melbourne. We talked about his moderate finish to the end of last year. I hope he has a really solid year.
Same.
And then can make a call on his career either way, because a guy that's been as good as him for as long as him, I hope he gets to go out.
Well, you know my thoughts on it. I thought he should have hung them up last year. But
yep.
I just hope that it's all on his terms. He's been good enough.
Yep.
He's been a great servant of footy and a champion player. I just think it's all on his terms. It needs to be on his terms. I like it when it's on their terms, when they're great players.
So Jesse Hogan, the interesting thing there is that he looked in really good nick. He wasn't in the rehab group. And I think Fremantle only has three in the rehab group now, which I think was...
So who's that?
I think Joel Hamley's one, Alex Pierce is another, and Sam Switkowski.
So how's Stephen Hill tracking?
Stephen Hill, I'm told, is back training with the main group.
Good.
So that they're looking at, not far off a full-strength team. I think the feeling is they will monitor Jesse Hogan closely over the next 3 weeks with his training, and then they make a decision on whether he goes to the hub with them or not, or whether they let him have a little bit more time to himself. The feeling is they are really, really keen to take him to Queensland and to be part of the group and hopefully to get him ready to play. But we keep hearing the same message out of Fremantle. He will be ready to play when he is right,
yep,
when the time is right for him. This is not about, you know, a specific timetable that suits the club. It is about a specific timetable that suits Jesse's mental health. So they'll be monitoring how he integrates back into the group, and then obviously the fitness side of things. But I have to say, from a fitness perspective, he looked in good shape.
Good.
Jesse Hogan.
Good, good. What did you make of Dennis Cometti's comments? 16 exhibition games, there should be no flag, there should be no Brownlow. You know my thoughts. My thoughts are, yes, there'll be an asterisk around the season, but I still think there should be a Premiership Cup handed. I still think there should be a Brownlow medal handed, provided we get the 16 remaining rounds in, plus finals. It will be different, but I still like to think that there's a carrot at the end there for them.
I mean, there are a few people whose views on football I respect more than Dennis's, but I think
same.
If you win a flag this year, and particularly if West Coast were to win the flag out of the Queensland hub, or for that matter, Fremantle, Adelaide or Port Adelaide, we just probably think West Coast is the most likely out of that group. I'll tell you what, there's no asterisk next to that flag.
Mm.
You know, there are a few scenarios which will put an asterisk next to a flag this year. There'll be no asterisk coming out of any flag that's won by those teams.
I would agree with that. I think it's tough for interstate teams to win. I think it's tougher if you're in the West, and I think this makes it even tougher again.
Yeah.
So I think it would be an extraordinary premiership should West Coast or Fremantle salute this year. Although you would like to see them, if it's Freo, we've discussed this before, I would like to see them salute for the first time in front of people.
But imagine that there's that. But imagine... And I think Fremantle will do well to play finals. So just
– of course.
Keeping that in mind. But imagine the mark they would set for their successes in history if they were able to say, and their successes in future were able to look back and say, look at the standard that group of players set for the Fremantle Football Club. Sent to Queensland, young team – not given a hope in hell, injuries galore at the start of the season, played with without six or seven of their best players in round one. You know, issues surrounding their high price forward, had a succession of players walk out on the club over a period of 2 or 3 years, had to sack the coach, new unproven coach, new culture,
new
CEO, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That team rolls up and salutes. You can put that one down in history as an absolute trademark standard setter for the Fremantle Football Club.
Right now it's that 2012 onwards era, that 2013 grand final appearance, which is not a bad marker, but there's no flag there. So right now that's their marker.
Yeah.
Jeff Kennett, not unfamiliar to make a comment here and there, but 3-year moratorium on clubs. In other words, once we get through this, in 3 years, let's look at the clubs. If you can't survive, if it's not sustainable, you don't survive. Interesting comments. I sort of tend to – I don't want to see any clubs go under, but I agree with him to a point, because I think once we get through this, I think the era of propping up clubs is going to be over.
I think what we have to do and what we have to decide on is what is the level we're prepared to let this competition operate at. And I've made this comparison before, Quarters. The comparison I would make is with Formula One. There are Formula One teams who have the capacity to spend a lot more than the other teams and possibly blow them out of the water and make it an uncompetitive sport where the result is pretty much predetermined before they start. And let's face it, it's not far off being predetermined before they start.
If one?
Yeah.
100%. For two or three teams it is, yes.
But they do put limits on certain things, and they do put certain specifications on it to try and equalise the competition. The key for the AFL is not whether teams are affordable or not. The key is how affordable is affordable for the ones that aren't the really rich ones. And that's the key. And I think there are mechanisms they can put in place to make the three or four teams that are most under threat, and those teams would clearly be their expansion teams, who they're backing to the hilt. So that's Gold Coast, GWS. And then there are obviously St Kilda, Melbourne, North Melbourne, and probably you'd almost throw Port Adelaide into that mix as a team that they wouldn't need too much to go wrong for.
Koshy's just running at you with a Balfour's pie about to strike it.
Yeah, and a hot one, yeah, with the mince really steaming hot in the middle of it. What we have to be careful of, and Jeff is a bit prescriptive there, I think, what we have to be careful of is that if we made that statement at certain periods in the late 80s and the late 1990s.
Man, the Hawks would be out.
And Richmond.
Mm.
Richmond would be under threat. There was a time when Collingwood was technically insolvent.
Mm.
The Bulldogs at various stages have sailed close to the wind.
Very
now they,
so.
You know, they feel that they may be able to be an unassisted club. Things can change. I think.
I remember the Save Our Skins and the Richmond Tin Rattling. Remember both of them. I lived through them in Melbourne.
So are you happy with 18 teams?
Yep.
Are we thinking there's too many teams in Melbourne?
I'm thinking there needs to be a team in Tassie.
So I think the question is, how do we change the number of teams in Melbourne? How do we get better representation for Tasmania? And how do we do that and keep all the teams solvent? I think there's an answer. I really do. I think rather than shifting teams completely, you half shift them.
Yeah.
And you try and get them to retain their Melbourne base. Get them 8 games in Melbourne where their members get tickets to every game, even if only two of them might be home games and 6 of them are away games. Set it up that way and maybe do the same for Darwin. You know, maybe Melbourne goes to Darwin and plays 9 home games in Darwin, plays 8 games in Melbourne where 2 of those games are home games and 6 are away games, but their members get tickets to all those games. And when you think about it, if you're able to go and see your team play 8 games, how different is that to a Fremantle member who gets to see their team play 11 games?
Yeah.
Because if you're a Fremantle member and you want to go to the away derby, the derby versus West Coast, good luck getting in. So really, Fremantle's membership buys them 11 games.
I think it could work in Darwin. I still like the idea. If you're going to go into Tassie, I reckon you don't go in even 2/3 arsed. I think you have to go in full boots in, I think, to Tassie. That would be my view.
Do the crowds justify that, though, Quarters?
Well, because they haven't had their own. They've had North Melbourne. They've had Hawthorn. Over the years, they've had various other clubs visit, but they haven't had their own team, something that they know is theirs, wholly and totally theirs. That's the difference. I think Tassie yearns for that. I'm not sure if Darwin would really be that fussed if they just got a handful of games. That's my point.
Well, I don't think 9's a handful.
No.
Like, I think, what do they play there now? Two? Two in Darwin, maybe one or two in Alice Springs?
Yep.
That's a handful. I think nine is most of a season. Nine is too shy of what Fremantle fans see. If you can convince Fremantle fans that their team is, you know, wholly and solely yours, then I reckon you're a fair way down that. And what you can do is you can set benchmarks for their memberships in Melbourne, and you can say, in order for you to retain these two home games that we're going to play in Melbourne, we need, and the figure might be 25,000, we need 25,000 Melbourne members. Mm. We will guarantee those 25,000 members two home games, and we will guarantee them seats at the away games you play in Melbourne. Mm. And then if you look at that, you've got, you know, nine games somewhere else, eight games in Victoria, and then you've got five games spread around the other football states. I think that's a reasonable outcome. You'll get government support for the team. You'll get government support from the Northern Territory and probably over and above the government support you get now, and you'll get government support from Tasmania probably over and above the government support you get
what,
now.
All good options. I think there will be real change come out of this. I think there will be.
I would hate to think that a team that is otherwise viable goes through a really bad period for 3 years. And let's not forget, we may get a group of members who get angry at the AFL or at their club for whatever, and there's a run on memberships, and you could end up with a team that is in serious financial difficulty at the end of that, but that team in 10 years' time has the capacity to be a strong and powerful entity in the AFL. I'm saying Jeff's wrong.
Speaking of that, what did you make of the West Coast options for members? So pledge, credit, pause or cancel. Pledge, you donate. Credit, you roll over to 2021 for $50. There's the pause where nothing changes. You just go to the games this year if you can. And then there's the cancellation for $35. I think they're reasonable options. Frio's will be coming in the coming weeks, I believe.
Coming days.
Coming days, okay.
Yes.
I think they're reasonable. I don't think you can ask much more of the club than that. I think that's pretty reasonable.
What it shows is the financial might of West Coast, that they're basically the first club that can come out and say, okay, and they would have sat down and they would have done the sums on this and they would have known. Great goodwill gesture to their members, and it is, without question. But they also know that in a worst-case scenario where most of their members say, well, okay, if they're saying we can have our money back, we're going to get our money back, they can absorb that. Now, that just shows, I think the West Coast are the financial outlier in the AFL. They're the richest, most powerful club. They may be the biggest club. Quarters, you know, everyone.
Yeah, they'd sell very close to that mark, I think, if they're not.
Everyone talks about Collingwood and Richmond, the monster Melbourne clubs. Hawthorn's a very big and Melbourne
Essendon,
club now.
Essendon.
But I think when you look at how big a football state WA is and you look at Fremantle being about an average size club in the AFL, and West Coast being, what, maybe 60% bigger again than Fremantle?
Yeah.
That probably tells you West Coast is an absolute monster club. Great gesture by them. Well done. Hopefully the Dockers come up with something really good as well over the coming days and their members are happy with that.
My only advice is, I mean, I understand people who've got financial difficulties and you can't afford it.
Yep.
If you can afford it, stick with your club. That's my only advice, if you can.
Yeah, I agree.
They need it. We've got a mailbag this week, Duff, from Matt, who says he's the reverse quarters. He's a sand groper based in Melbourne.
Right.
I'd be really interested in your favourite footy reads. Wayne Carey's biography changed my opinion of the man in a positive way, while Ben Cousins' book gave me an insight into how he has gotten to the point he's at now. You should check out Boomtown by Sam Anderson for a great NBA read too. I'd throw in there myself, I would say one of the better footy books I've read. I don't read a lot of biographies or autobiographies. I like a bit more fiction, but recently our great mate Glenn McFarlane, his read on Sam Mitchell was very good, called Relentless, Sam Mitchell's biography. That was a very good read, incorporates his move over to Western Australia as well. I really liked Kevin Sheedy's Icons of Footy, 21 Iconic Footy Players, goes through Cable, Farmer. That was a really good read too. Mm-hmm. There's a few good books on Sheedy actually. The best footy – oh, the other one I was going to say is Brother Boys by Sean Gorman on Phil and Jimmy Cracker. Very good read.
Great writer, Sean Gorman.
He is a great writer. The best sporting read, full stop, might go close to the best read. Actually, the best read, my favourite all-time read, is an English classic, Wuthering Heights. I'll just put that on the record.
By Emily Bronte.
Oh, great book. But the best – maybe the best read in sport, King of the World by David Remnick. He was the editor of The New Yorker.
Yeah.
He's written some cracking books.
Yes,
Lenin's Tomb was one. He won a Pulitzer for – was the – the Soviet Empire. But this book on King of the World, if you get a chance, it's Ali in his formative period. So it was when he was Cassius Clay and then changed his name to Muhammad Ali, took on Islam. It's just such a – it's just a gripping book. And the ring scenes, you're in there. You really feel like you're in there with him. So that's my recommendation. Yourself?
I think the best AFL autobiography I've ever read was Nathan Buckley's. That was a terrific read, and it talked about the highs and lows. Very honest look at his development as a person and a player. And I became a person. I always respected Buckley. I always found him a really good person.
Yeah, same.
To deal with, despite all the other people talking about him as a, you know, they regarded him.
Well, the nickname that he had, Fig Jam. Yeah,
yeah. I just found that. I never found.
I
him
I found
that
him
way.
Completely different. Yeah, I did. Yeah,
completely different to that. So that's the best footy book. I would say, of course, Purple Heart by Matthew Pavlich, co-written by Mark Duffield. Still available at all good bookstores.
I've got to confess, mate, I've got to read it. I haven't read it. Well, where's the copy? Where's the signed copy?
Oh, I'll try and track one down.
Double signed copy.
They sold like hotcakes.
Have as well.
Glenn. They sold like hotcakes.
As well.
Andre Agassi's autobiography
is one
of the great autobiographies, and because he's such an interesting character. Mm. And he had some interesting times in his life.
Yes, yeah, really. I believe that is. I actually have that sitting on a shelf at home, so I'll read that next.
And anything written by Michael Lewis, the American, of course, the guy who wrote The Blind Side, anything sporting or non-sporting by Michael Lewis. He also wrote stuff about the GFC, which was just makes fascinating stuff. They've made movies out of it. He's one of the great writers as well.
There you go. A couple of recommendations there. Thanks, Matt.
And that's our mailbag for today, Quarters.
That's right. Oh. I've got some Pataki chocolates and some Ballantine's ham to have out. I sound like I'm on World of Sport.
You're overreaching. Thank you very much for joining us today. We've got footy in train. It's coming towards us.
Oh,
June 11 is the start date. Quarters, quickly before we go, June 11, too soon?
Too soon.
Too soon.
I understand now they want the flexibility in case there's another phase of COVID come through. They need the flexibility. Get that. I'm just concerned that players are going to ping things early because it's only really 2 weeks of contact before they're back.
Yeah, me too.
I'd give them another week or two.
I have that worry. I think they'll get away with it if they get out of this without soft tissue injuries early, and we'll all say, oh, well done. They've created space for themselves at the back end of the season. If we get four or five really top-end players go down with soft tissues, then I think there'll be a lot of gnashing of teeth both inside AFL headquarters, inside the four walls of the clubs, and also inside lounge rooms of people who want to see their stars on the field. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week.
Whoa, before you go, producer Josh here. Remember, if you are a fan of the podcast, send us your thoughts. Do you have some big AFL ideas that just keep getting lost on your mates? Or has ISO allowed you to crack a big footy problem? Well, send us the topic you want two of Australia's most experienced and respected footy journalists to discuss. Send us your name, location, and thoughts to me at josh.garlep, that's G-A-R-L-E-P-P, at wanews.com.au. Just make sure you chuck mailbag in the subject. Thanks for listening.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast on the game.
You know who? It's unbelievable.